Yeah, I'm just a firm believer that it's your job to mentor, to guide, to lead. And that means sharing your expertise, having a point of view. And if someone's not down with it, you don't have to get upset. If unsubscribes are a good thing, they're not bad. Like, for example, if I had a list of 5,000 people, and this isn't really realistically feasible, but let's say you were given the proposition that you could take a position, maybe it's controversial, maybe whatever, where half your list would unsubscribe, but the other half of the list would love you insanely. Would you do it?
That's a really good question.
Welcome to Seven Figure Small, the podcast that adds to your playbook of strategies and tactics to attract an audience and build your business, all without investors or employees. I'm your host, serial digital entrepreneur, Brian Clark. Thanks for joining us. Let's dive in. Trudy, Jared, how are you today?
Brian, great. Good to see
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic.
You're looking amazing, as always.
It's good to see you both. Good to hear you both. Good for all of you out there that are tuning in to be here. We are very happy, as always, that you're joining us. But one thing that we have forgotten to mention over the last couple episodes is that we have a brand new newsletter called The Playbook over there at unemployable.com. And a lot of you are probably already on that list. But if you're only on the podcast feed, you're only getting a fraction of the story now that we've got the playbook out. And you can get the playbook for yourself by heading over to unemployable.com. Just go to the homepage, hit that blue button that says find out more, and that will take you to the page to sign up. Or if you want to type more, you can type in personalenterprise.com. And that'll get you there as well. So yeah, join us for the newsletter. We've got lots of other great stuff, including our brand new reader referral program that we just launched, where you can get cool discounts on unemployable stuff, plus some cool merch that we're working up. Trudy, did you know you were working up cool merch?
I really, you know, and I'm always working up cool merch. And so now I see it's a priority. So thanks for that.
It just live in front of everyone, I've escalated this particular issue. But no, we've got some ideas that are pretty cool. We just got to get it put together. But the cool thing about the referral program is you earn discounts for every subscriber you send to the playbook off unemployable products. And then we're going to add the merch on top of it. So it's going to be super sexy. That's my story. I'm sticking with it. All right. We've got some fun stuff to talk about today. Well, actually, not so fun. This article that I shared with you two. And I'm aware of this phenomenon, especially in the creator world that is based on social media platforms, which the media likes to equate with the entire thing. The rest of us who've been around since blogging and podcasting and YouTubing know that there is a much broader and older world that is now called the creator economy. This is a piece called The Perils of Audience Capture. And I have read stories about this, you know, off and on over the last couple of years about creators on various platforms suffering severe burnout, basically getting hassled by their audience if they don't show up every day, or they don't show up enough, or they don't do what they want, you know? And I'm just like, who's in charge here? This is ridiculous. But this article, you know, basically spreads the blame around to the creators themselves, where they get so addicted to making the audience happy, and or really, I think it's a fear that they'll lose their exalted influencer status if they don't pander and cater to the whims of the most vocal aspect of the audience. And the first example given in this particular article is just terribly sad to me. I don't know who wants to take this, Trudy, if you want to take it, but
yeah,
this poor kid. I mean, yeah, Trudy, why don't you go ahead and talk about
this
guy?
Yes, the audience gets the idea of audience capture, which is basically, like Brian was saying, pandering. So it's talking about a YouTuber, and we'll share in the show notes a link to the article about a guy named Nicholas Perry who was vegan, and then for health reasons he stopped being vegan, and then he started just sort of putting up videos of himself enjoying talking and eating with friends, and then you know he started getting more and more traction. And then people
wasn't he pretending like he's eating with the audience? Like he was sitting at the table, he was eating, and he would talk to the audience like they were his dinner companion, which is somewhat interesting. I wouldn't watch it, but it went way off the rails from there.
Right. Yeah. So they had, from there, everybody wanted him to eat more and more and more. And so you can follow the theme. What happened? He did exactly what the audience wanted him to, became obese, not very happy, millions and millions of viewers, maybe wealthy for what? So
not even obese, morbidly obese, like morbidly and unhealthy. Obese. And it's just disgusting.
Yeah.
And this is all,
that picture was real at first.
Yeah.
No, it's real. And you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess I can somewhat understand the audience peer pressure, if you will, but there's also a big difference here. And there were some other examples in the article, like Trudy said, we'll link it up for you. But, you know, there was a political example where a woman became an extremist on the progressive side of things, or really beyond, not even progressive, just anti-Trump. And she just started going off the rails, being egged on by the audience. And then she started attacking other progressives because they're like, I don't think that's actually accurate. It had a lot to do with the Russiagate thing with Trump. And she just went totally radical. You know, we've seen this on the right over and over again. That's par for the course. But again, it's being effectively dictated to by your own audience. And, you know, in the realm of politics, the realm of entertainment, that's not necessarily what we do, trying to help people with business or life or health or personal development, what have you, these type of things. You know, in this case, we're really in the position, as we've talked about in recent episodes, of being mentors or guides, which is really another word for leadership. So a good leader obviously listens to the audience. A good leader understands the audience, specifically the pain and the problems and the desires that they're trying to solve. But a good leader never panders to the audience, or you're no longer leading,
right?
And so this brings to mind, you know, even in a business like ours, or if you're a James Clear or, you know, someone who's trying to help people basically solve a problem that's important to them, you will get people who will write back to you an email or on Twitter, social, what have you, and they'll basically tell you you're wrong, right? But as long as you're sticking to your philosophical guns, if you will, the way you help people, you're not wrong. They're just not right for you, right? So this is, we tell people you have to have a thick skin, but you don't really have to have a thick skin. You just have to say this person's opinion doesn't matter because I am trying to connect strongly with people who do see things the way I do, the like-minded people, the people who share a worldview and core values and all this. And we keep coming back to this, which is why it's so important that you actively choose your audience based on who you are, as opposed to every time someone pushes back on you, then, you know, you're like, oh, well, I better change. No, you know, and of course, you've got situations where you don't have to try to be controversial these days. If you basically take a firm stand on anything, someone's going to you know, push back on you. That's fine. That's good. Right.
Well, like I want to jump in for a question/answer for a moment. Cause I do have this whole idea of pandering to an audience. You know, we're talking to people about, you know, amplifying your message, joining movements, creating movements. I have been in that position and I became a panderer, and it's actually partially because it's brutal out there, right? You sort of, you're like the Pavlovian response, right? Like, oh, I'm getting good feedback, so I'm just going to double down and do more of that. Or, oh, somebody just character assassinated me big time online. And I'm speaking from experience, as years ago, I was on a YouTube show called React, the Fine Brothers Entertainment. It's not a little show. It was maybe a part of being in LA. I just applied to be on the show. My son and I used to watch React videos. We loved them. I applied. And strangely enough, they picked me. And I joined a show that had 21 million subscribers.
Yikes.
So, right. So then All of a sudden I became part of the cast. And when I first came in, it was just like kids, it's kind of kids say the darndest thing. And then it became grown-up people say the darndest things. Like, who's that song? Oh, I don't know. I've never heard it before. And it's like, you know, the number one hit, it's Beyonce, whatever. Ha ha ha. So I went along with it because it was fun. And then I had an audience, and then I launched my own YouTube show, and I have, you know, like 16,000 subscribers. It's all people from that show. So as the show became more and more popular, they started segueing in different things. So at first it was just my opinion on things, and it was fun to give my opinion. And I was honest about my opinion. I didn't pander. I just said exactly what I thought, and it was fine. But then this was 6-7 years ago, things started getting really ugly. So then I shared my opinion, maybe a political opinion or even something that felt like a political opinion. And I would have hundreds and thousands of comments talking about how I should die. It started getting really strange and upsetting. And my little YouTube channel was growing, but now people just, you know, my little conceit was I do things for you so you don't have to. And I would just do fun and silly things, and it kept me young or whatever. So I thought. But then, you know, the show started changing, and they were like calling in me. I was, you know, people liked hearing my opinion, making fun of me, et cetera. I started getting, you know, booked more and more often on the show and things like that. And my point is this, that eventually what happened was I found myself speed eating a burger against my dog. I don't even eat meat. And I was doing that. That happened to me. Now, this is an extreme example of what, you know, what this audience capture thing is. But I can tell you, once you get some traction, it becomes a little intoxicating. And when there's no traction, also, it becomes very disheartening. And you kind of get caught up. It's easy to get caught up in these things. So I guess what we're trying to say here too is don't do that. And I can tell you, I ended up walking away from the show because there were so many things out of whack. And it was no longer correlating with my values or interests. Yeah. And I'll tell you, it was hard, but also, you know, walking away from feeling like, oh, I have some little modicum of fame and, you know, financial reward from this thing. However, it wasn't worth it. And for anyone who's building something, like, I think sticking to your guns and being aligned with your values and ergo your audience's values is a lot more important, a lot more interesting, a lot more fun, a lot more upside. So that was just my own little story about what can happen.
Yeah. And that type of social platform is brutal in the sense that it's out there in the open. It was more entertainment than advice. But I will say that the early days of blogging, when we had comments and really active comment sections, you know, the trolls would show up, especially during the early days of social media. We'd make on purpose the Dig homepage and just get a stampede of traffic that, you know, you spend half the day trying to keep the servers up and the other half, you know, slapping little basement dwelling boys who hate marketing. And I'm like, well, why'd you click the link, dummy? But, you know, I got combative in the comments with people famously, because to me, they were insulting my audience by by the things they were saying about me or the content or what have you, because these people were legitimately there to learn something that was important to them. So I did the opposite of that, I guess, what we're talking about here with audience capture, in that I saw it as my job, not necessarily to defend myself, but to defend the people who were there and didn't think that what we were talking about was stupid or a waste of time or what have you. But now, you know, with a focus on email, you know, you'll get a reply. No one's going to see it. You don't even have to respond if you don't want to. And often, you know, I don't. I always respond to nice things unless I just run out of time. But yeah,
but sometimes you will come to us and say what you would have said in reply. And it's always really entertaining.
Usually it's right before we go live on with this show. And Jared has outtakes that if they were played, you know, your ears would melt. But yeah, I love to share the latest stupidity that I interact with. But, you know, we don't get that much of it anymore. Because I think it's just very much a matter of being very clear who you are and what you stand for and the type of person you're trying to attract, as opposed to this what, you know, come one, come all type attitude that you see with people trying not or trying to cast the widest net that they possibly can. And that's a failure. I mean, you know, recipe for failure right there. So I don't know. It's disheartening. The hate. I mean, the trolls, that's their form of entertainment, right? You know, and it's the idea of if the audience is smarter about your topic than you are, then you have no business doing it, right? And again, this is the difference, I think, between a political or entertainment-based creator and someone who's trying to help people solve problems, which generally those are the type of businesses we're trying to help people build. So, yeah, I'm just a firm believer that it's your job to mentor, to guide, to lead. And that means sharing your expertise, having a point of view. And if someone's not down with it, you don't have to get upset. If unsubscribes are a good thing, they're not bad. Like, for example, if I had a list of 5,000 people, and this isn't really realistically feasible, but let's say you were given the proposition that you could take a position, maybe it's controversial, maybe whatever, where half your list would unsubscribe, but the other half of the list would love you insanely. Would you do it?
That's a really good question.
Of course you would. Yes. But a lot of people would say no. They're like, I can't let go of the 5,000 or the 10,000. The number doesn't matter. The 1,000 true fans concept, whatever that number ends up being, is all that matters. If your 1,000 true fans are on a list of 10,000, the other 9,000 ostensibly don't matter, but you don't have to run them off on purpose, right? But if they're not into you, eventually they'll go their own way and you keep being you and being the type of expert and the type of mentor to your audience that matters to the people who care the most in return.
Yeah, I would say, though,
I want to make one more point about the audience capture idea, because I think it's really easy to, you know, read the article that we're going to post and you see the picture of the guy and it's like, I'd never eat that many chicken nuggets to get that big, or sure to even to hear your story and be like, there's nothing that would make me, whatever it was, eat a hot dog with your dog or whatever.
Eat a burger against my dog. Michael, I won, by the way. So that was good.
Good. Good.
Wow. I want footage of that.
It's real easy to look at those extreme examples and say, that would never happen to me. And I think what's really important to understand about this audience capture idea is it is insidious and it can build slowly. And I know this from personal experience with the assembly call. Went through this for a few seasons. When we started the show, everything was good. It was easy to kind of be positive, right? And be supportive of the program. And they had a few down seasons and it was real easy to fall into the trap of be negative because the audience is being negative. And, you know, I remember getting a couple of emails from longtime listeners who basically said, you've lost your way. Like, the reasons why I started listening to you guys, you're not doing that anymore. You're giving in to all these people that want you to be negative, and that's not what I came to you for. And so, you know, because I often hear like, hey, you want people to unsubscribe. You want, you know, but you better make sure that it's not, that you don't fall into this audience capture, and it's the people you actually want as part of your audience that are turning away. And so I think when you get, you know, messages or feedback from people that have been around for a while and that you know are your people, take them seriously. Because it can, you can get so far down the road that it's like, oh, okay, well, you're not for me. But actually, sometimes those people are pulling you back to where you should be in the first place because this audience capture has happened and you don't even realize it. And I'm
grateful
for those people who had enough, cared enough about it to be like, this isn't what I came to like in the first place. And I don't think this is you.
And that's why asking, you know, I don't like to ask a lot. I like to observe. I like to lurk. But, you know, feedback is great. And factoring it in is crucial, but that's different from pandering or letting your audience run the show. Because again, in our particular brand of creator business, if the audience is running the show, then why are you even doing this? That's not the goal here.
Spot on, Jared. But also, you know, just saying some of it's a little easier said than done, because it can get intoxicating if you're hitting a nerve with people. And you see it, like I said, sometimes your gut is like, I'll just double down, like what you experienced, Jared. It's like, and yeah, and maybe you're even feeling it too, but just also being clear about what your mission is and sticking to it. I think that's really important. I mean, my mission on that show, I talked about the opinions I shared usually was a lot of peace, love, and tie-dye, a lot of, you know, nice things on, you know, maybe hard and controversial topics. I like doing that. And then when it got into silly time, that wasn't me at all anymore. So really staying authentic to who you are and remembering what that is makes it easier to sort of take a stand and be like, yeah, this is me. And I'm, you know, I'm teaching you something here. I'm forging a path. Come on along. And if you're not into it, you're not down, that's fine. But I have to go in the direction and be, you know, deliver on what I've promised you, right? Because that's part of what we are when we show up. We show up as how we are. And not when you shape your identity. And I really feel like online, because we are in other spaces, you know, we really promote email primarily, but you show up other ways on a podcast or, you know, you post on LinkedIn or whatever. It's endorphins, right? We get dopamine downloads when we see people liking our things or whatever. And we're not impervious to that. You have to be really, I think, conscious about, the online validation you get or not, and just stay clear on who you are is what I have to say. And don't speed it against your dog. Don't do that.
Yes. So, okay. So Brian, so let me ask you this. So what do you do then if you do make a mistake or you do screw up?
Yeah, I don't. That? Yeah. And the title of this episode is The New Authority. And, you know, at Copyblogger, when you were VP of marketing over there, we used to have the Authority membership program. Half of that was about being the likable expert. The other half had to do with SEO, something we don't really talk about as much here at Unemployable because time has passed and things are different. But the concept of authority still matters. But I think people's conception of it is, again, you know, the whole idea that the foremost expert wins the business, completely false, right? It's more, are you someone that I identify with? And you're an expert to me. You're an authority to me. But the other mistake I see people make, I see it a lot on young Twitter. You know, you got these young, it warms my heart to see these young kids out there hustling, man. But they come across as absolutists because they think that no one will listen to them if they're, you know, make a mistake or if they qualify their statements. And it actually works against you because you lose credibility when you you know, unless you're speaking to a audience that favors authoritarianism, which there are those people out there, but in general, people do not respond well to that. But if you make a mistake or you screw up, lean into it. Don't try to appear infallible. That is the opposite of being an authentic human being. And there's some really cool psychology behind this as well. One of the newsletters I recommend in this week's playbook is called Why We Buy by Caitlin Burgoyne. And she talked about recently the pratfall effect. And what this basically means is, she gave the example to lead it off. She gave lots of examples. It's a really cool newsletter. But basically, you go into a job interview, it's going well, and then you spill coffee all over your shirt, and it turns out that you end up getting the job and the interviewer liked you even more because you effectively embarrassed yourself and you handled it, right? The pratfall effect is basically, we make mistakes, we screw up, and people like you more because they realize that they already listen to you because you know what you're talking about, right? But then you become human. Again, more like them, of them, of their tribe. And it actually works to your benefit. So I'm not saying conduct yourself like a train wreck. I mean, some people may... It takes a special amount of talent to be just a complete F up all the time and keep your audience. But at the same time, no one's perfect, and aiming for perfectionism and if you screw up, basically trying to deny it or pretend it didn't happen or all of these things actually will work against you, right?
Brian, when you lived in Dallas, did you ever listen to The Ticket?
I did. Occasionally,
okay, so yeah. One of the most successful sports radio stations in the history of the medium. They're incredible. They win Marconi's, just a great station. Their most popular segment every week is called the Emergency Break of the Week. And they take their biggest technical meltdown or like host mistake and they put them together. They take the three best and they have the audience vote on what was the best one. And this is like the best radio station. They take their biggest mess ups and they just lean into it. And it does. It makes it so much more just relatable. Makes them guys like regular guys. And that really works for sports talk radio, where you're trying to just kind of be like the guy sitting next to you at a bar. But I've always taken that lesson to heart, because it's so true that, you know, this works. When you lean into that, it does make you more relatable.
Well, think about how we brought the podcast back, talking about how we lost two of our flagship sites and all of our podcast episodes. I mean, you know, you trying to build, demonstrate your expertise and authority, you might just sweep that under the rug. But no, we basically said, hey, it's been a hell of a 6 months. And hopefully you learn from our misfortune that, when you're in digital business, your website and your email list is your business, and let's make sure we back things up. So it goes even deeper than this. You know, you think about things from a copywriting or a conversion standpoint. I was reminded of a famous split test. Two, prominent copywriters, Gary Bensavenga. A lot of copy people will recognize that name. And another guy named Dan Rosenthal. And they were basically had a friendly disagreement about a headline and which version of it would work better. And I was reminded of this test. It'd been years since I had originally read about it, but Eddie Schlainer over at Very Good Copy, another great newsletter that I recommend in this week's playbook. He reminded me of this thing where these two basically disagreed. One headline was absolutist, as in this will, or, absolutist means will, shall, these kind of absolutist words. And then you have conditional language, which is may or could or can, right? And so this goes back to my observation about younger people on Twitter using these absolute statements, this is going to happen and you got to follow me because I know and I guarantee, you know, this kind of stuff. So they did the split test to see which version of the headline worked better. What do you think? Trudy, give me your best guess.
Well, Brian, I did read the article, so I don't want to give it away.
Oh, that's cheating.
So I think everybody should read the article, though. There's a link in the show.
Absolutely. Ooh, yeah. So the conditional language won by a lot because it's more credible. Okay. And there's an interesting observation. Like there are some really, I don't want to use the word aggressive, but they're not shy about selling, you know, people in the marketing space or really selling anything online. And some of the best people are very conditional about it. They're happy to tell you about their screw ups. And they're also happy to tell you to leave if you don't like it. Like they make a point of it and it works so well. But you have to get over that fear of unsubscribe or fear from criticism because it's actually a good sign. And that is the hardest mindset shift that you'll have to make, which is if some people are digging me hard and others aren't, I'm on the right path. And other people will be like, well, some people like me, but these other people don't. So maybe I should tone it down or maybe I should. No, lean into it. Right. But yeah, so I've noticed a lot of the internet marketers that have been around since the beginning of Copyblogger, when Copyblogger was kind of positioned against that kind of hypey, you know, internet ATM kind of stuff. But I've noticed that a lot of these guys, and most of them are guys, are very conditional about everything. They'll tell you it takes work. They'll tell you they won't make income claims. You know, all of this stuff that used to happen. Now, part of this may be that a lot of high profile FTC slaps, right? You know, that'll get you conditional in a second. But the fact that it actually works better is what you need to take to heart, right? Be honest. Trust is the number one mechanism for making sales. Trust, no like trust, right? Trust is the hardest one to get, it's the easiest one to lose. So if you're being incredible in the literal sense of the word without credibility, you're going to lose. So don't feel like authority means that you have to make these absolutist statements. You don't have to be infallible. You have to know more than the audience. You have to have a point of view. And you need to stick by your guns, right? Again, if no one likes what you're doing, well, then maybe you've got a problem. But otherwise, if people just aren't into your thing while others are, you're on the right path. Focus on the people that you're doing well with and maybe even double down on those type of people. So, you know, when you've got tools like Sparkloop, which is a sponsor of the playbook for the last several issues, this is reader referral software where your newsletter subscribers can, you know, recommend you to their friends, family, colleagues, what have you, and you give them some sort of reward for it, right? That's word of mouth marketing. It's the most powerful stuff there is. And the offshoot of that is the people who are into you tend to recommend you to other people that are going to be into you, as opposed to other mechanisms of list building. So you got to have enough of an audience, a minimum viable audience, to get that kind of action. But anyway, it's a smart move to embrace who you are, embrace what you believe in, embrace your values, and find people who feel the same way. And those are the only people you care about because those are the ones who are going to buy from you.
Yeah. And it can be hard because sometimes the short-term incentive, and Trudy, you were talking about this, you know, the short-term incentive to draw a reaction can make you want to be put out an absolute statement, you know, or even do something that like people will respond to arrogance, for example, like that will draw a reaction in the moment.
But oh, and don't get me wrong. You can actually say something absolutist on purpose to be controversial if that absolutist statement is something that the people who love you are going to go wild over. And marketers do this all the time. But you have to be intentional. You have to know, right? Now, if you say something stupid and it offends the people that you do care about, then that's when you need to back off and take that feedback to heart. But yeah, sorry, Jared. That was such a good example that you brought up. I just wanted to make sure that, yes, some people do court controversy, but they do it intentionally.
Yeah, well, no. And look, you know, so you can do that and, you know, you can put something out there that's like, you know, that's absolute and you can get that response that you want. And it can, again, it's one of those things. It can be insidious and it leads you to do more and more. But I think the point that you were making is that may get you something in the short term, but humility ultimately wins out long term when you're trying to build an audience. And so being, you know, being authentic, again, you know, leaning into your mistakes, you know, showing people that, you know, you don't have to have this absolute statement and you're putting conditions on something and you're, you know, leaving room for discussion about these things. That's what people respond to long term, you know? And so it's just, it's the tricky part about working online and building audiences online is there's all these little short-term incentives that you really have to watch out for because they can really start to kind of bastardize the message that you're actually trying to put out there. You have to be intentional and just make sure that you don't give into that stuff.
Yeah. And so, you know, authority means that the audience views you as an authentic, likable expert. And part of that means occasionally you screw up, you know, that's okay. You just made yourself more human to your audience and you become more credible and trustworthy to your audience when you are intellectually honest, right? When you say, hey, this can help you, but you're going to have to do this, this, and this, not this will absolutely work 100% time with no work and no effort whatsoever. You know, that kind of crap. I don't know who that works on, but apparently it used to work on some people. Things have changed in that context. I'll tell you that much.
Good.
Yeah. And you have to be an authority, I think, to be able to be conditional and say, here's the things I recommend and do it and things should work out for you. You know, that if you don't have the authority behind you, if you're not really don't have the expertise, that falls flat too. So that's where, you know, again, intentionality on the other end, you got to make sure you're back too.
Yeah. And I'll leave you with this thought. I've seen some people making claims that I know aren't true. And I'm just waiting for those chickens to come home to roost when the audience realizes, wait a minute, you don't actually know what you're talking about. So you've lost all credibility with me. We'll leave it at that. And talk to everyone next week.
What were the claims? Like they invented the question mark?
That is a good claim, you know. Summers in Rangoon.